You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Mackay Watch is made possible by KKCR's sustaining members in partnership with a Feinberg Gallery, Healthy Hut, and Ho'olono Naturals.
A Feinberg Galleries, showcasing the world-class, award-winning fine art photography of Aaron Feinberg. Now open daily in the Hanalei Dolphin Center and the shops at Kukui'ula Po'ipu. A. Feinberg Galleries proudly support Kauai Community Radio by underwriting this program, 634-5804, or expandingvisualreality.com.
Healthy Hut Market and Cafe, now right off the highway in the old school building in Kilauea. Organic and natural groceries, produce, raw foods, beer and wine, an expansive organic salad bar, fresh hot meals, smoothies, juices and coffees, and locally made products. Healthy Hut, a family-owned business, supports KKCR.
Ho'olono Natural Remedies, Kauai-made farm-to-bottle herbal preparations for optimal health. Herbal cough and cold relief, salves and tonics, mamaki tea, cultured noni juice, and more. Ho'olono natural products can be found at health food stores or online at hoolono.com.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Oh, we ain't got a barrel of money. Maybe we're ragged and funny, but we'll travel alone, singing a song side by side.
So you know what happens when you choose intro music years ago? It goes through its cycles, right? And all of a sudden, it's pertinent again, right? Nobody's got a barrel of money these days, but we're in this canoe together. And we always begin the show by hoping that your ohana is well and safe and at home. If you think that you have been exposed, call your doc, ask for a test, call the Department of Health. We're actually asking everyone to do that just because the last two cases on Kauai, including the one today, came from people coming back from Honolulu. And there you were on that plane. Do you think they're calling everybody on the plane? Not likely. So take care of yourselves and pay attention to where you were and when. And are they telling us which flight? No, of course not. So, you know, if you've recently traveled between Kauai and anywhere, but specifically Kauai and Honolulu, before they did the shutdown, doing the shutdown tomorrow, folks, tomorrow. If you go to Honolulu, you're free. Come back from Honolulu, you're locked up. So if you think you were exposed, please call your doc and ask for a test. It's better to know than not know. It's better for you, it's better for your family, and it's better for the community. We always want to appreciate our mayor and the county administration for their leadership and assertive actions to make sure that we're all okay. They're being very brave here on Kauai. I think you folks know that. And they're making good decisions, and they're making them quickly and cleanly. And they're making the right ones, as far as I'm concerned. So support them when you can. And speaking of that, today we're going to get an update on some community health in our Makana North Shore Urgent Care Clinic. Dr. Ted Kimball is in the studio with me. He's been here before. I'm talking about the clinic and what we hope the clinic would be able to do and how the clinic would benefit our community. Well, it's under a little bit of test by fire at the moment and trying to provide the same services they did with half the population that they were generally serving. So trying times for sure, but the clinic is open. It's available to you. And if you think that you need to be seen, you know, don't hesitate. Don't wait. It's safe to go. If you're hesitating about going to Mahelona or you're hesitating to go to Wilcox, stay home, go to the clinic. It's close. It's clean. It's people you know and trust. We would encourage you to do that. So we're going to talk with Dr. Kimball today about what's going on there now and what they hope to do once we get past some of these hurdles. And also a little bit about some of the other ways that the clinic is working with the community, with other community efforts such as the community disaster resilience plan and things like that. This isn't just an urgent care. This is a community center. This is a community clinic that, I don't know how old some of you people are, but in the old days, for example, in Berkeley, we had a lot of neighborhood clinics. We had, you know, the clinics on hate, and they didn't just do one thing. They didn't just take care of your medical needs. They listened to you. They paid attention to who you were, taking care of yourself and who your families were and what your work was. And that's part and parcel of being a community doc. And it may not seem intuitive that an urgent care provides that service, but this one does, because that's who these folks are. These are folks that care about this community, or they wouldn't be doing what they're doing. And they're doing it at sacrifice, so they mean it. And they're still here, you know, for those folks who thought, flash in the pan, they'll come, find out they can't make $1 million, and they'll be gone tomorrow. That didn't happen. They're still here, and they're not making any money, but they're still here. Mm-hmm. So why don't you catch us up a little bit? I want to remind folks, too, that you recently made a very shining star appearance on the Mel and Charlie Facebook Live show. That's turned into quite a thing.
Yeah.
Because Mel Raposo, you can search Mel Raposo on YouTube, and all the shows are posted there. So if you want to hear more about what Dr. Ted Kimball said then, which won't be too different from what he's going to say today, it's there as well. But you widened your audience at that point, for sure. So welcome back. We're glad you're on the island. You've been here for a little while, a few weeks?
Yeah, almost a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. And it's not been a vacation. They made you quarantine, didn't they?
Yep. Yeah, and we wholeheartedly agreed with that. I agree with you, Auntie, about the approach that the mayor is taking and the governor as a whole. It's a very bold and brave effort. It puts a lot of stress on the businesses. I know that, being a business owner here. But I agree with them in that Hawaii is a very singularly unique situation out here, with 244 ICU beds on all the islands combined. If we were to have a major outbreak, it would be very difficult to manage. There's no way to transfer people like we do back in the hospital I work at on the mainland, where we are able to transfer from 23 different surrounding hospitals to major trauma centers. And even then, in many of these states, the strain on those ICU beds, some of those hospitals have 100 to 200 beds themselves, and they're strained. And we just don't want that over here.
And here we sit with, what, 9?
Yeah, 9 on Kauai.
Yeah. It's frightening, because we thankfully don't have our 30,000 tourists, but we still have all us, which is 70,000 and 9 beds. So it increases the burden, for sure. And just in case you're wondering, because I know KKCR sometimes wonders when I have to make the nexus, the connection between Makai Watch and some of my guests, they kind of look at me like, okay, what's the link? Well, first of all, it's a community resilience issue. But some of the work, at least some of the work that the clinic does, is related to ocean injuries and ocean stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit to start with about all the different kinds of things that you've seen. I think when you were here before, we talked about the first eel bite that one of the docs had ever seen. But you see the gamut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We again, being its own ecosystem here with its own risks and exposures, we definitely see a broad range of marine injuries and marine envenomations, marine accidents. So for sure, bites and CNN sea urchin injuries, all kinds of things like that, coral scrapes and cuts, surfboard injuries, lots of suturing.
Crash and burn on the reef stuff.
Yeah, lots of stuff like that. And you know, people get over here and are not used to standing on the rocks down at Queen's Bath, and we've had some splendiferous tumbles down there. And unfortunately, as many know, we lose people every now and then down there. So it's a dangerous area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that we've talked a little bit about, but at some point, maybe not so much this show, but a future program, I'd really like to talk a little bit more about this idea that people not used to being in the water, they fly long flights, say they're coming from the East Coast, and they fly across country, and then they fly across the ocean. They land in Lihue when we have tourists here, mm-hmm. and jump in a rental car, and they don't even go to their hotel. They drive as fast as they can to the beach. They throw open the car door, and they dive in the water, and then they drown.
Yeah.
And there's a philosophy or some theory by the fire department guys that they're suffering from embolism more than they're suffering from just drowning. That you know, all that time at altitude is complicating. So at some point we should remember it. I'll try to remember to talk about that phenomenon when we have more tourists on the island. It's more appropriate, but stupidity is a thing, and but ignorance is another.
Yeah.
And so for right now, I think that the clinic is functioning at a low level of activity for sure. How low are your numbers now compared to before?
Yeah, there's as you mentioned up here on the North Shore, depending on part-timers, there's anywhere from 14 to 20,000 folks that would be considered locals up here, and that doubles, of course, or more than doubles with the visitors. So by that math, we're about half down from where we normally would be. And then the second thing that you pointed out earlier, Auntie, is that folks that are local who would otherwise come to the clinic or come to the hospital, and this is a phenomenon across the United States, they're fearful. They're fearful that that's where the virus is, that the mm-hmm. hospitals are a gathering place. And so with their other medical problems, non-COVID-related problems, they're not coming in. And so that takes an additional toll. And so we've really gone out of our way to be very careful. If you've been to the clinic, you know it's very, very clean, very carefully kept. And the reality is in most hospitals, the transmission rate is actually very low. The only businesses that have consistently stayed open through this whole virus pandemic and functioned at full capacity are hospitals. And if you go across the country, the transmission rate internally in the hospitals less than 1%. And it's because we're used to wearing masks. We're used to hospital socially distancing as part of the community. So in my hospital, we have 2,500 people a day come in, work all day long, and go home, and there's virtually no transmission. And what that is two points I would make is that it's safe to come. If you're having problems with your diabetes, your hypertension, you're having chest pain, gallbladder pain, don't wait. Come in and be seen. It's safe to come in, and you'll be taken good care of. Secondly, the idea that social distancing and masks don't make a difference is just not true. That the hospitals prove that. And if we could do that as a community, even when we don't have very many cases like we're seeing on Kauai right now, that's what will keep the virus at bay. And it will actually extinguish it if it's done well, because it just can't survive. It has to survive in a living host. And people, 85% of people that get better. It's that 15% and the kapunas that are at risk, the 5% that end up in the ICU. Some hospitals have a 70% death rate of that 5% that end up in the ICU. So that's really the important thing. And as you said, 70,000 people on the island. If 5% of those people get exposed, if we had a pandemic here, 5% of 70,000, that's 3,500 people. And then
where are they going to go?
Where are they going to go? There's no place.
After we filled the 9 beds, I do not mean to make light of that, because I do know that our local Department of Health in Lihue and the county administration does have some contingency locations, and we do have some ideas about what to do about that, because 9 beds is, you got to do something. But but it's never going to meet 3,500 people, so it's never going to meet 1,000. So, you know, it just makes much more sense. Wouldn't you rather wear a mask than end up, you know, dead because there's no ventilator? I mean, that defies logic to me.
Yeah, and before I came over, I was in the ICU, and I had a 42-year-old man die without any comorbidities, no diabetes, no hypertension.
Just died of COVID.
Just died of COVID. And so anybody that perpetuates the conspiracy theories that this is a hoax, I can just tell you from firsthand experience, this is just simply not true. We have a virus, and there's a lot of things that we've had to learn over these months. Doctors, virologists.
Because it's a new virus for us. Yeah, it's not new on the earth, but it's new to us.
Yeah, politicians. Everybody's learning, so we have to defer to the experts. Don't believe this is a conspiracy theory. This is a pandemic. We've had them before in human history. It shouldn't be a surprise that we're having one now. And really importantly, it boils down to two things. We have masks and social distancing to help, and we have a vaccine to help that's coming. But it's a long ways off. And we can literally crush our economy to death in keeping this pandemic going by not social distancing, or we can really make an effort at that. There's no other course for us right now while we wait for that vaccine other than masking and social distancing. And I really encourage people that have watched it. I do a show on the mainland every Wednesday with 23 hospitals, and we've watched the mandatory mask interventions just change the curve.
And then bring those numbers down.
Yeah, when they open up again and they take the masks off, it goes back up again. And they introduce it again and it goes back down. It's very responsive.
You can prove
it. It has a delay of about 7 to 10 days, but it responds every time.
Wow. So, you know, we're all concerned about our jobs, and we're all concerned about those people that we know and love that have small businesses that are really struggling right now. There's an answer. The answer is everybody wear the mask, everybody social distance, everybody wash your hands. It seems so simple.
Yeah.
It's a new habit, for sure.
Yeah.
And for those of us that don't, you know, work in a hospital on a regular basis, the mask is, you know, cumbersome and hard to get used to, but it can be done. And it's almost too simple. It's almost too easy. Is that really all we need to do? Yep, it's really all you need to do.
Yeah. It reminds us of that great Old Testament story of the staff being held up, and all you had to do was look, and you were cured. Many won't look, and there's many who just believe. I feel so strongly about this that I would say on the air that if you're a perpetuator of conspiracy theories, you are literally a cause of people dying, because everyone that dies has a chain of infected people that comes up to them. They get it from somebody who got it from somebody who got it from somebody. And if people would mask and socially distance, like you said, you get used to it, they suddenly break that chain that would otherwise have led to somebody.
It can't move on.
Yeah,
it can't live.
On.
The whole point of a virus, like with anything on Earth, it needs to live.
Yeah.
In order to live, it must procreate. In order to procreate, it's got to live inside you.
It has to be a vector.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you choose whether to be its vector or not, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the whole vaccine thing. To me right now, what we're hearing is, you know, 10 different really reputable, you know, labs are working very, very hard. Money has been put to it. The feds have put a lot of money to it.
Mm-hmm.
Private money has been put to it. And I frankly like the idea that they're all kind of – a little bit of competition is not a bad thing.
No.
They want to be first. They want to, you know, they want to solve the problem. They also want to make the profit. but a couple of months ago we were talking about, maybe by Christmas – it's sounding to me like it's a little bit further out than that now. I, for one, would prefer they take the time and test it well so that we're not wasting money and not wasting our time.
Yeah.
As a guinea pig, because I was working in a hospital at the time when the first flu vaccine came out, and having been a guinea pig at that time, that was not a positive experience to be the guinea pigs. I'd rather not do that again.
Yeah.
It turned out well after a while. They tried it on all of us that couldn't say no.
Yeah.
But we need to do it. We know how to do it better now, and we can do it better. What's your guess on timing?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. We've seen studies of the virus and the medicines that treat it accelerated too quickly because of the sense of urgency. Mm-hmm. And we've circumvented a lot of the usual standard practices of doing research, and we've had some bad outcomes because of that. And I think we're learning there, too, that we don't want to do that with the vaccine. Vaccines take time. It takes time to study initially in vitro and then in vivo. But that first wave of tests that goes out to people, it takes some time sometimes to see the response and the reaction and the buildup of antibodies. If we push that too fast, we'll leave holes, and we'll really need to not do that. And because this is going to be something that's going to have to go worldwide and quickly when it does come through. All the stuff I've read shows that we've learned some lessons with that. We've brought a lot of resources to bear, so it will be faster than the average vaccine. But I think I feel comfortable to say that that they're not cutting any corners. They're doing it well, because the minute anybody suspects that there's a problem with the vaccine, it'll be off the market, and nobody wants to invest that much money and have it pulled. So
right.
I think that's something that I feel comfortable that the right work is being done. The second question, and we've talked about this before, is then getting around the problem of not wanting to be vaccinated. And I know this is a delicate topic, and I approach it with respect and understanding that there are people that feel strongly about this. But I've worked in humanitarian services all over the world. I have vaccinated thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And with occasional reactions, nothing's perfect. People have allergic reactions. I've never had anyone have a life-threatening reaction. And any of the data that has connected this with things like autism has been debunked by science. It just simply has. And I know that there's a lot of stuff out there that people try to perpetuate these myths. It is not risk-free. Nothing is. Nothing in medicine. No medicine is. But I can tell you that we have more deaths from Tylenol that we all take over the counter for headaches than we do from vaccinations. And the use,
especially for babies. I mean, baby has a toothache. Baby has a small fever, a low-grade fever. That's what you do. You do Tylenol.
Yeah. So,
and by the way, the reason you do Tylenol is because doing aspirin didn't turn out well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that you weighed the risks between aspirin and Tylenol is a better solution. So we learned from that as well.
Yeah, just like we've learned with vaccines. The original flu vaccines, there was a lot of reactions to it,
yeah.
And people are doing better. We don't have nearly the problems with it as we used to. And it's simply the concept of vaccination was one of the top five medical discoveries in two centuries. I mean, the number of, and I wouldn't insinuate for a second that you're old enough to remember this, Auntie, but you think of the...
Because you're sitting too close to me, folks.
Yeah, the years of polio,
yeah.
The years of measles, mumps, and rubella,
no.
The years of smallpox, where whole villages in third world countries were wiped out by smallpox, and those things are just of the past. I say that hesitantly because they're coming back. We had a whole outbreak of measles on the North Shore here, and there are literally, as a side effect of measles, it affects male reproductive organs, and there are young boys that won't have children because of measles outbreaks. And those things just are not necessary.
Because they had the measles instead of the vaccine.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's there are things that can happen to you as an adult male as well as a result of some of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not without. But smallpox, we literally wiped out smallpox with a vaccine. That's what it did.
Yeah.
It's a conversation that you have inside your head and with your family. But it's also one that you... it seems to me, should try to get the best information that you can.
Yeah, get the facts.
Yeah, and that's not always what you see on the internet or social media. And it's important, even if you've seen a situation where somebody, a child particularly, has reacted to a vaccine, There may have been other circumstances in that situation that you're simply not privy to.
Yeah.
Docs can't tell you that stuff. They're sworn not to. And so there may be way more to the story than one knows.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for that. So are we still thinking maybe by next summer?
Yeah, to answer the original question, sorry, Auntie.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that they're probably being conservative when they talk about it, when you hear it on the news, in the sense of when it'll be completed. Now, completion and available to you and me are two different things. So
yeah, especially out here on this rock in the middle of the sea.
Yeah, and they're going to go they're going to be prioritized to people in nursing homes, people hospitalized, and to healthcare workers, frankly, because those are the people on the front lines confronting this. And, you know, my hat is off to the many, many, many people who have sacrificed, the nurses and not just
students.
The nurses and doctors, but the staff that comes in and helps clean these rooms, the secretaries and front desk people that are exposed regularly. Those, we forget to mention them sometimes because we're always focused on the docs and the nurses. But there's a hospital is a whole team of people. Those people really deserve to have that vaccine first because they're at the higher risk. And so those will be the first wave, and then it will get out to regular community. And I think we may be talking spring to summer of next year before a real mass vaccination is able to take place.
So I think it's realistic to say to yourself and to those that you love that getting used to the mask and the social distancing, you're going to be doing it for a while. You're going to be doing it at least until next summer and here in Kauai probably after that, because it's going to take time to get out to the hinterlands.
Yeah.
So that kind of puts a parentheses around what we're thinking of in the future. If someone thinks that they've been exposed, they need to have their doc write a script to come to you to get a test from the clinic?
No, right now we actually are testing walk-ins.
Okay. So if you think you've been exposed, you can go in the clinic. Now, he says walk-ins because it means you don't need to make an appointment ahead of time, but you do need to. When you get to the door of the clinic, you have to call them on the phone. They come to the door. You have to have a mask on. They ask you a series of questions and ask you, of course, what you want. And then you're seen in order of triage, of order of need. So, you know, it's not like it was just a few months ago where you just went and opened the door. And your hours are a little different, 7 a.m. till...
Yeah, we're 7 to 5 now. We'll be shifting to 8 to 6 because there's a little bit of after-work rush that we've been cutting off a little prematurely. So we'll be 8 to 6 and then expanding that as we're able to. But as you say, the thing that might change is we're always – this whole situation is very fluid, as everybody knows. And one of the things that we're running into is the lack of testing materials, even the Q-tips we use, the swabs we use to swab with, and the reagents for the test have become scarce, and we've had whole shipments just be absconded, honestly, by the Health and Human Services Department.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have an order coming from a commercial producer,
mm-hmm.
and you'll find out that when they don't show, you'll call and they say the Health and Human Services took it,
mm-hmm.
and that's not uncommon. I've seen that in multiple hospitals in the Intermountain West, and so. The point is, we may be going to just testing symptomatic patients only.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't hit that yet. We're willing to test people who need testing. We've had some people come in, parents that need to be tested so their child can go to school. We can still do that now, but I just give fair warning that may change,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
especially if we get more of an outbreak over here.
Yeah.
We hope not to.
Well, we had one yesterday and one today. So,
yeah.
You know, that's our version of an outbreak. You know, it's not going to take much. And what I've been telling people is just, you know, it's only going to take one.
Yeah.
It's only going to take one. If you're hanging out down at Blackpot with, you know, 50 of your closest buddies, it's only going to take one.
Yeah.
There's no way to put numbers to it. Well, I was only with 10 people.
Yeah.
It only takes one. It doesn't matter. Even the mayor's guidance of in Honolulu of no groups larger than 10, I don't know why 10 is magic. I've never quite gotten why 10 is magic, but it's only going to take that one. So, you know, the idea is, you know, and I you hear Dr. Kimball call me auntie because I'm old, and one of the blessings of being old in our culture and our society here on Kauai, at least, is that people do show their love, they show their respect. And I've been telling people, my husband is 80, and my husband and I walk into the local grocery store in Hanalei, and people run for the corners like cockroaches in a light. And the first time it happened, I thought, you know, whoa, you know, did I offend, you know? But no, it's respect. They're just getting out of the way and giving us room to navigate the aisles. And we don't move as fast as we used to, so it takes a little time. But it's respect. Yeah. And then I'm getting phone calls fairly regularly. Do you need something? You know, can we bring you something? And that's a feature of many cultures. I was listening to an item on the news yesterday of the Navajo Nation. And their chief just said, that's it. You guys, masks, social distancing, no fooling around. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't have a lot of water, you keep your hands as clean as you can. And they flattened the curve.
Yeah, they had a real outbreak, and they flattened it now.
They did flatten it. And they flattened it with a firm hand. Yeah. And you know, sometimes I think we need a chief. But we're lucky because here on Kauai, we have one. And Mayor Kawakami has been as forward-thinking as it's possible to be, while offering support. But if we want to save our mom and pops, I think that's a good line, right? If we want to save our small businesses, we want to help them. You can't help them any other way except to stay healthy, mm-hmm. and to flatten the curve so that we get well as fast as we can, and they can come back, because some of them are in real trouble.
And be creative. I mean, most businesses with the masking and social distancing can function if they find that new and creative approach, mm-hmm. of separating tables, or so only so many people in the shop at one time. It's not the mad rush that it used to be, but still support your local shops, go there, but follow the social distancing and masking, and we can keep things going. We can do it. And
I've had people call me and say, I'm going through Kapa'a, can I pick you up to go? And then just leaving it at our door, you know, and waving, and you know, that's a wondrous thing, you know, and that's doable. Yeah. That's totally doable.
And the nice thing about having low numbers, even as you say, it just takes one, but if you have low numbers, then you can contact trace and you can isolate, mm-hmm. and you get those that are exposed quarantined, and it stamps it out and muffles it out.
Mm-hmm.
If you get an outbreak like they're starting to have on Oahu, the resources to contact trace all those people is overwhelming.
It's
like a wildfire, and if you can see the smoke, put it out. See the smoke, put it out. Where you have 1, 2, 10, even 12 cases, you can do that. But if you start to get up into the hundreds and 200s, it really overwhelms the system, and that's when it becomes a firestorm, and that's where Texas, Florida, Arizona, California, those places.
We've gotten away from them.
Yeah, it's out of control. Yeah.
We're going to take a little bit of a break. Dr. Kimball, you know the rules around here. The guest usually gets to choose the music, and he did, of course. So, Laura, you ready? Okay, we'll take a little break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Motor up, my motor up, come on.
So, did you get the irony? The irony, right? The irony. KKCR is careful about not playing YouTube stuff, so that's the version we had, but, you know, you can take it to any conclusion you want to about the rhyming irony there. This is Makala. This is Makai Watch, and we're here today with Dr. Ted Kimball of the North Shore, Makana North Shore Urgent Care Clinic, and catching us up a little bit on what's going on at the clinic, but and his knowledge of what's happening with COVID-19. We're really in a fortunate position because Ted is keenly attached to all things COVID on the continent, and he's dealing with it in weekly lectures and his responsibilities and gig as a intensive care doc, but also, you know, works with a whole lot of these teaching professionals, medical professors that are, you know, they're all trying to figure it out, folks. They're all dealing with it on different levels, and they're all trying to figure it out. But for us here on Kauai, the challenge is interesting to me. I mean, it is a sociological picture. It's just kind of interesting to me because we know, just because of numbers, that we're at risk. And because people travel here, we know we're at risk. And we have a culture of kissing and hugging. We have a culture of touching. We have a, you know, I mean, there are places in the world where people don't do it. Japan, for example, mm-hmm. you know, they've been wearing masks for forever, and they bow and they, you know, put their hands together as they do in India.
Space.
Yeah. Yes. And they provide space between each other. And we're just not like that here. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is for us not to be, you know, in each other's faces and in each other's arms, you know, all day long is really difficult. I see people hesitate with me. They want to, and once in a while a younger person will say, Auntie, I have to hug you, and I just, you know, make sure I turn my face away. But I know where that comes from. You know, that's pure love, and some of it's respect. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very hard. So I asked Ted to join us today, first of all, because he's on island, so thank you for coming back, and also just to kind of catch us up with Makana Urgent Care Clinic and what it's doing. You are offering testing, and but minimally, we have to be really careful because supplies are not generously available. And you were telling us a story when we were listening to the intermission break about a couple who, tell us that story, because I think it's telling about, you know, how statistics affect us personally. We don't think they do, but they do.
Yeah, I would. So this is I think underscores a lot of socioeconomic things in our country. Many of you have heard that this virus is a little bit discriminatory. It actually literally affects the African American and Hispanic population at a higher level per capita than it does the Caucasian population. And unfortunately, there's a lot of reasons for that, and it's a true fact. But one of the situations that came to me clinically was a transfer from an outside hospital to our ICU, where a gentleman had come in to this more rural hospital positive with COVID, and quite ill, and ended up in the ICU. And as we started, this was at the early days of contact tracing. And so they went back, and English was a second language for him. And so it took a little bit of time to get the history clear. But he had actually been symptomatic for about 12 days. And he had gone to work symptomatic for those 12 days. And when I heard the initial...
Thinking he had the flu or something.
Yeah, well, and I initially heard... It was pretty out there as far as be careful, don't go to work symptomatic. And so there was a little bit of judgment about that. And when more of the story came in, it became very clear this was a family with a mother and father both working full-time, and many of us on the island can relate to that, sometimes carrying two jobs just to make ends meet. But there was not a choice to not work. And so... you know, they would have lost their apartment. They would have been on the streets had either of them stopped working. So he did his best. The wife also was exposed, and again, the two of them doing their best to live paycheck to paycheck. continue to go to work, and it resulted in 52 positive employees between the two places that they worked. One, every single where he worked, every single employee tested positive. And it's tough. It's a very tough thing to hear a story like that and know that it was a choice between being put out on the street or not being able to put food on the table, or going to work symptomatic. And it's a very hard thing. But the idea is that there's more help, there's more understanding now, and so I would encourage, thankfully we're just not seeing large numbers of symptomatic people here, but I would encourage anyone who's symptomatic at this point to come in and get tested, because we are seeing the surge on the islands, and again, catching this early, we can douse it out. When we have small numbers, contact tracing is much easier than when we have large numbers like they do in some of these other states, where it just gets out of control. It becomes a firestorm. And so if you do become symptomatic, remember that early on, several months ago, we thought that if you had the flu, if you tested positive for influenza, that it was almost impossible, at least highly unlikely, that you also had coronavirus. We now know that's not true. And so you can have both. Just because you have the flu doesn't mean you won't have coronavirus. So that's another looming problem, is having to discriminate as the flu season approaches, discriminating between influenza and coronavirus, because the symptoms can easily duplicate each other or imitate each other. The other thing, as Auntie pointed out here, is we're a little different here on the island, because our population literally can double when tourists are here in full court, and so the virus spreads with social interaction and with people who don't normally associate with each other associating with each other, and that's when you're a tourist destination, that's exponentially more prevalent, that kind of interaction, because mm-hmm. you're now putting a whole bunch of people from disparate locations and disparate circles of exposure all in one plane, all offloading onto the island. Mm-hmm. And so we're not only at high risk because of the resources that would need to come to bear, we're also at high risk by opening up to tourism prematurely. So it's a tough call, and I know it's tough on businesses. But I think please trust me, I've seen firsthand the surge that we had in Utah, and it was not as bad as it was in Arizona, Florida, or California, but we were very close to maxing exceeding out our resources with multiple big hospitals. And I actually sit on the committee at the University of Utah Medical Center of three doctors that have to determine who doesn't get a ventilator. And I was not looking forward to having to play that role.
No kidding. And so, that's the worst ever.
Yeah, it was not going to be good. But we're
you got past it.
We got past it. And
plus, you
have
places you can ship people. Even if you have to put them in an ambulance, we simply don't have that here.
Yeah.
And even if we could, we can't. So, yeah. There's the addeds. Just as if anyone wants to, in the last remaining few minutes that we have, call us. I didn't give the phone number because I thought we were just going to go do exactly what we just did, which is just lots dump a whole lot of information on you. But it is 826-7771, and you're welcome to call if you want to. Laura's actually willing to answer the phone, so there you go. I want to make sure that we tell the stories, too, about the other things that the clinic does. I mean, COVID is on all of our minds, and I want people to hear once again that it's safe to go into the clinic. Please do go into the clinic. Please don't. If you lose your sense of smell or your sense of taste and you don't have anything else going on, please go into the clinic and get tested, because that's an oddball symptom, but it's panning out to be a pretty telling one. So yeah. Don't ignore it. For those of you like I that have had leptospirosis several times. You know, we've got all those hot cold symptoms and so forth. You know, these things mean something. The body doesn't just decide to stop smelling for no reason. It does it because it's the sense is being interfered with by something, and that those neurons are not firing. So you really need to honor that and pay attention to your body. I wanted to talk a little bit about that. We're seeing, as every community is, some of the stress and tension and need for people to just take a breath and self-care. There's a lot of anxiety and fear around, I don't have a job, and it doesn't look like the federal government is going to learn how to work together very soon and get us another check. There are places to get help, you know, to talk to somebody. But I got to tell you, folks, one of the easiest things to do is to talk to a stranger. It's the easiest way to go. You know, you can talk to your family, and everybody's going to have their own angle on stuff. But if you're feeling worried about something or whatever, believe it or not, in my experience, the easiest thing to do is to go to a clinic and say, you know, I don't know what's wrong, doc, but I'm just feeling this way. These folks are professionals, and they've seen it all, heard it all, and if they, you know, can't address what's going on, they know who can. But self-care in this time, you know, if you have a chance to get out in the ocean, get out in the ocean, mm-hmm. get wet. Yeah. I know you just took a rather epic hike, and that might not have been completely indicated, but, you know, getting out and hiking. The good news is there's not 1,000 tourists on the trails. You know, get out and do something. So if you're feeling stressed and anxious, you know, go outside and take a long walk. Yeah. Take a walk and drink water. Yeah. And what am I missing on that? Are you seeing that? Are people coming in?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. There's very high anxiety, very high tension. Sadly, suicide rates are up. Domestic violence rates are up across the country. And I think it's to be expected at some level. And I think we're learning a lot, too, about how to manage those things. I think some of the things you mentioned, exercise, start an exercise regime if you haven't started it. Switch it up. Try something new. Use time to do reading. I think that in my experience, if you are talking to folks, let's try not to politicize this. Let's not spend a lot of time politicizing this viral situation, because I think that just inflames the anger and the tension and the anxiety. We're one big family. We're all human beings. We're all vulnerable to this virus. It's in its own way, it's a very unifying thing if we let it be.
Mm-hmm. And we're in the same canoe together.
Yeah, and remember too that none of us are an island. We do have a responsibility to protect not only ourselves, and we all feel strongly about protecting ourselves, but remember that masking is just as much about helping other people, mm-hmm. protecting our kupuna, helping people who are here and are immunosuppressed. We don't know who those people are. Despite some of the comments that have been made nationally, children can get it. They are just as contagious, and they are more than likely to survive it better than our kapuna, but they are just as dangerous a vector. And so my personal feeling about schools and going back to school is that would be premature. I know that there's a lot of issues there. That's a whole other show talking about that. But to me, it's no different than going to a bar and having no social distancing there. And so I really think that it's a new era for us, and we are in that same canoe, and let's help each other.
I know people are being as careful as they can be, and many people are choosing not to. So I've got a bunch of our grandkids and kids that are going to homeschool, and some of them have capacity, and some of them, you know, will need help. But that's fine. We can all, you know, muster together. I'm going to have a meeting soon with the principal at Hanalei School just to talk about the community disaster plan and so forth, and checked in with him. He does have, you know, there's stories all around about how many new kids are, you know, coming into Hanalei, and there's plenty of rumors. But There are some new registrations. There are some people that have bought some property recently on the North Shore that are bringing their families here, and they're doing it because it's safe. And it's so safe that they've registered their children in Honolulu School, which hasn't opened yet, but yeah, intends to open at least, you know, part of the way. The other thing I want to be sure that we add, that I know is that Ted can tell the story too. He came, he had an exemption because he's a medical doc and he's at the clinic, but he still was under quarantine. So he could be at home or he could be at the clinic, but he couldn't go buy a quart of milk, right? So he's at home and the National Guard did show up at your door. They showed up twice, right?
Yeah.
They didn't have all the right information, but they did come and they did check on you in person.
Yeah.
So, you know, people who doubt that that's happening, it's happening when you're on quarantine. And I know that we have over 700 people on the island right now who are in isolation.
Mm.
And they are, you know, that's a lot to watch, right? So
yeah,
the National Guard is still here and helping. The local police is still helping. And I don't know what your experience was when you flew over, but you run a bit of a gauntlet when you come in to Lihue Airport. And I have talked with some of the staff that are manning the check-in there, and they confirm your accommodation. So if you say you're staying at da-da-da-da, they confirm that before they let you go.
Mm-hmm.
And they confirm that it's not a vacation rental. They confirm if it's a hotel, they call the hotel. If it's your own house, then it's your own house. And they come to check and see if you're really there. And there have been cases every single week where that check-in process at the Lihue Airport has turned people around. They did not let them leave the airport. They put them right back on that flight, and they went back.
Mm, I didn't realize that.
And so they have the authority to do that. What we don't have, people, please hear this. We don't have the authority, and neither does the governor, to stop flights into Lihue. We cannot do that.
Mm.
What we can do is quarantine you when you get here.
Mm.
And the things that the mayor has authority to do and the governor has authority to do, they're doing. But it would require the federal government because it's a federally regulated
sure
industry. So, you know, there's that. But I want folks to know that, you know, a lot of the department heads of our county government are manning those tables at the airport. They're there at night checking people in and checking on you. And
yeah,
I, for one, feel really good about that because there are people from here, and they know. First of all, they get the planning director there. He knows exactly where the vacation rentals are. And
yeah,
if you give him some oddball address, he's going to go, I know what that is. And you can't rent a car, and you can't, you know, I mean, there's a lot to this. So
yeah,
I want to give you a chance to to finish up with what's going on at the clinic, and you're not going to be here. You're going to be here another few days, and then that's
yeah,
it.
I'll be back again in September. But as I mentioned before, with businesses, with the social distancing, there's a lot of creative reinventing that has to be done. And so one of the things that we're doing at the clinic is, and we planned to do this pre-COVID, but it's been a great time for it, is we've introduced a dermatology clinic now. We have 6 full professors of dermatology that will be initially doing teledermatology virtually, and we've had our first patients there to see that, and that's really catering to the folks that are here. We don't there's plenty of people in need. There's a great deal of need for that specialty on island, and we're meeting that need, particularly up here on the North Shore. And so that's been a new introduction for us. And skin lesions or rashes, things like that that you want to have us look at, we're glad to see you for that. And then just reemphasizing again that take care of yourself. Don't be afraid to come in. We're very safe and clean. And so if you've got issues with any of your medical concerns that you are postponing coming in for, you know, see your primary care doctor, come in and see us.
Yeah, so I want to thank you for taking us on again and coming in. You're always willing to jump in, and we appreciate that. Your information is important. And also, want to thank KKCR for continuing to support this kind of programming and community radio. It's an odd duck, you know. Not a lot of communities have it anymore. We appreciate it, and we hope that if you find this information useful and helpful, that you will support KKCR in any way that you can. They're one of those small businesses that's taken the hit because we can't do the fundraising that we used to do and all of those things. So support the place that gives you the facts and the good information, and stay tuned, please, for Quiet Earth Connections. And after that, with Sunset Jazz. So one of the ways I do self-care is just sitting and listening to good music and not getting caught up in the media news and not getting wound around somebody else's stuff.
Yeah.
Staying on my own stuff. Thank you, Ted, very much for doing this, and thank you, Laura Christine, for I always say producing. She says no, it's engineering. I think that's a different degree.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure. You take, all of you, take good care.
Be safe.
Maybe it's trouble and sorrow, but we'll travel alone, side by side, through all kinds of weather. What if the sky should fall? If the sky